session number 20625, Reel 1.
This is Colonel John McGregor interviewing Mr. Derek Hurst at Balhousie Castle on the 24th of July 2000. Derek, would you please tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Leicester on 17th of May 1933.
And where did you go to school?
I went to school, Mundella School, which is a secondary modern school.
And did you enjoy school?
Yes. Yes.
And what were your favourite subjects?
Geography was one of them, and history. Technical drawing, that sort of thing.
And you carried on these interests in life, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, I still like going round historical places and...
Yes.
We're a member of the... one of the societies for the historic buildings and that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And we go around different places.
And tell me, did you play sport?
Yes, cricket, mostly.
Yes.
And, mostly cricket at school. Mm. But after that, after I left school, I had a job in an apprentice bricklayer.
Did you like that work?
Yes, the outdoor work was always a thing for me.
What job did your father have?
He was in the Coldstream Guards.
And had you thought of joining the army at that stage?
Well, not. I hadn't thought of joining it then. But it was in my mind, sort of thing, later on.
He would have wished you to have joined the Guards.
Yes, yes. But I was a bit too short. They wanted 6 foot, and I was 5'9".
But, tell me what happened to bring you into the army.
Well, that came through National Service, the call-up of National Service. It was 1950... It was August 1950, and I had a letter from the report to Budbrook Barracks at Warwickshire, which is what, mid Midlands.
Yes.
And I reported there and done me 10 weeks training. From there, I went to Hong Kong.
And which regiment was that?
That was the Royal Leicesters.
The
Royal Leicesters. And I was in Hong Kong for about two months. Then I went to Singapore, which I was there for about 2.5 months. And I was put in a guard company, like an international guard company. And we used to guard different places in Singapore, all mostly buildings, government buildings and things.
And what age were you at this time?
I was 18. And from there, I went back to Hong Kong. And I was still in the guard company. And I'd been touring with transferring over to the Black Watch because one of my uncles was in the Black Watch during the Second World War. And I'd always, if I thought I went in the army, that was the regiment I wanted to go in. And I inquired about transferring over and that, and the powers to be were sorting it out, whether I could transfer over or not. And then I was moved back to Hong Kong, and we'd done some more or less field training then. I'm still in the guard company, but we'd done more or less field training, bringing us up to scratch on different pieces and that. I mean, while I was there, I'd done 2 weeks on what they call payroll duties. We used to have a Land Rover and an officer, a driver, and two NCOs. Well, there was one NCO and one private. And we used to sit in the back with Sten guns loaded. We used to go down to the bank in Hong Kong. The officer used to go to the pay desk, and we used to go in behind him and go and stand near with the backs to the wall, facing the thing. Loaded Stens, used to cock your Sten, and that. The officer used to draw all the money. He used to turn and come out to the door, and we used to fall in behind him. And outside, the driver was there with his Sten gun. The officer used to get in the Land Rover. We used to get in the back. Still, Stens were still cocked. The driver used to get in and drive off. And as soon as you drove off, you used to release your bolt on your Sten.
You were a corporal by this time?
No, I was still a private then. And then we used to go back to camp and do that. But I'd say I'd done that for about 2 weeks. It used to be quite a thrill going into a bank with a loaded gun and standing there while they draw the money, but it was interesting. And from there I went to Japan, and as I say, I was still in the guard company, and we went on guarding Japanese installations, prisoners of war hospitals with prisoners of war in. And
where were those prisoners of war? Where did they be?
They were Japanese at the time. There were a lot of them were high-ranking officers. You know, they're coming up for the trials and that, and being in hospital, they couldn't go to things. So we were guarding the hospitals, so nobody got out. But then, when the Black Watch came to Korea, I got the information that I could get a transfer, I could go to Korea and join the Black Watch, and that which I did. And it was, I think it was the Advance Party. And there was a lot of other lads that went into that Advance Party that were in the Leicesters, that had been in Japan, that were left there from when the Leicesters had gone out. And they were put into the Black Watch as well. But anyway, I joined the battalion there. So we went up to the line of the advance party. And the first position we took over was from the Leicesters.
Now we're talking about Korea.
Yeah, this is Korea. The first position we took over was from the Leicesters. We took that over and they moved out. But by that time, the rest of the battalion had joined us as well then. And
how did you feel when you first wore a red hackle?
Oh, I'm thrilled to bits, I was.
And how did the family react when you wrote to them, you know?
My uncle, when I first wrote home and told them that, he was quite pleased. He wrote back and said that he was glad I could get in, and because he knew I wanted to get in. And so even when I came home, he said then that, he said, I don't know how you got in, he said, but she did. But, he was quite pleased. And as I say, I we'd been, my eyes running a bit. We'd been down, say, the first position, and we moved from there when the battalion joined it, just after we moved to another position. I think it was 355. So I've got 355. But up until then, we used to wear the TOS with a hackle. And I'm sure it was 355. We had a lot of shelling.
355 being what?
A hill. A hill in Korea. It was just a hill. There was just trenches and bunkers on it. Nothing there, it was bare, it was just there, no plants, nothing.
How close to the enemy lines?
I believe 355 was about 500 or 600 yards, the nearest part of the Chinese positions. The shells a lot. And most of the casualties we had, which we had a lot there, was head injuries. That's where they brought wearing the steel helmets in. We didn't like it, but there you are. They said we wear steel helmets, and that was it. And I say probably a lot of the edgy casualties seemed to die off. You know, we didn't get so many. But just trying to think from there.
Before you leave there, just see, what was the country like?
Hilly, very hilly. It was rocky, it was hilly. You dug a trench, and you had to use a pick as well. You couldn't just dig it. You'd got to pick it and dig it and pick it and dig it and sweat and... Yeah, in the summer, it was really hot. It should get up to the 85-90s in the summer.
But night cold?
Yeah, it used to be cooler at night. Not too cold, but cooler. As soon as the sun started to rise in the morning, it would warm up again. But it was reasonable, you know, you could put up with it, because we've got those thick shirts on, you know, and we've got like windproof trousers. We haven't got KDs or anything. They were fairly thick, and you had used to sweat, especially with the thick shirt on. But apart from that, in the daytime, if you wanted to, you could take your shirt off, nobody bothered. You know, and just sit around in the sun, eat. We used to, most of the rations were like K rations, which we used to come in a box, and we used to get three tins of meat, three tins of biscuits, a block of cocoa, a packet of chewing gum, 20 cigarettes, a block of oatmeal, something else. The coffee. It was coffee. It wasn't tea. It was coffee. Besides this block of cocoa, and sugar. I used to get some sugar in it as well, and we used to have, in them packs, there used to be dried milk. But what you used to do was get tins of evaporated milk off the naffy wagons when they come up, if they come up. But if they didn't like that, you could get the evaporated milk from the Aisland sometimes, you know, the depot down, like the main stores we used to have. You got your headquarter company, down at the back, and we'd got stores in there. You could get milk from there. And we used to use that. And if, when we were in reserve, we used to have hot meals. We used to do our own. Peel potatoes, we used to have some potatoes come up, and that, we used to peel potatoes, and we'd get a chicken or something like that and cook it ourselves in there. And one position, when we were in reserve, we got hold of an old 50-gallon oil drum and cut one end out of it and made it into an oven on some blocks. We used to light fires underneath it. And the lid that we took off made us a tray to go in the middle. And we used to bake some bread in there odd times, if we get off of the yeast, that was. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you couldn't. But we used to bake some bread and that, and we used to do baked potatoes as well in there. Yeah, in reserve, so we used to, the meals and that, we used to do ourselves, and used to make sure we had a good meal, like. But in the line, I say, we always used to have the air rations, the boxes, with the kits.
But was movement above ground difficult and dangerous?
Not so much for us, the Black Watch, or I think a lot of the English regiments was the same. American regiment were different. They'd only got to put their head up above and that was it. There'd be a shot at it. But we could move around fairly easy, really. As I say, like the Hook, when we took over the Hook, the trenches there were only 3 foot deep. And Colonel Rose being like, this is, that's no good. He said, they've got to go down deeper for safety. So we dug them just over 6 foot deep, the main trenches. Yeah. And you could walk along there, no bother at all. Every so often you used to have a firing slit, and a step up. You could fire over the top. But you could, like I said, we dug all these bunkers, deep bunkers, right in the ground. And we had a load of sleepers and timbers come up, and that we put across the tops and piled all earth on, and made them really, some of them really deep and big. Yeah, it was all peck and shovel, all digging out. The height, let's say, the main trench was 6 foot deep. And you've got step-ups for firing positions. And also what we've done, in the back side of the trench, about 3 foot off the ground, we've done holes in along that, about just over 6 foot long and about 2 foot deep in height and just over 2 foot six wide. So when we're on watch, there's usually two of you in the firing pit watching. Well, one would stay watching for about a couple of 3 hours, and the other one used to go in there and just sleep and that, and used to wake them up and used to change over. But we dug those in there just for ease, instead of going right back. Yeah, a blanket, you used to have a blanket and that, you got your packer on, you see, and everything, so you're all right, especially in the winter. I mean, in the winter, you'd be up in the, you used to be stand to at 6 o'clock, and you'd go into the trenches and you'd all stand in the firing pits all the way around the position. And you used to be there roughly an hour and a half. And then you used to stand down, except for one bloke, you used to stay in the firing thing. And half the watch, half the platoon then used to go off, get their heads down for sleep while the others stayed up until about, used to do about 4 or 5 hours like that, then used to swap over. They'd come up and you'd go down. But say in the winter, when you do that, you used to go down to the bunker and you used to get in your sleeping bag as you were, boots, the lot. Yeah, and well, not only that, it was warmer. And so you used to get in and that as you were and go have a sleep and that and wake up. But in the winter, we had inside the, just inside the door of the bunkers, we used to cut a slit out and put an ammunition box, metal ammunition box in with a lid, and used to channel it down from the top to the back of the thing with the chimney, and we used to light fires in these inside the bunker. In the winter, it used to keep it quite warm. And except when it got dark, once it got dark, you couldn't make it up because of the flames out the chimney. But it used to be quite warm. I mean, some nights in the middle of winter, you'd come off your stand to and you used to have a balaclava. It was a straight piece of knitted material, holler, and you'd pull it over your head, and the bottom half you used to bring up over your nose, and the top half was it, so you just got your eyes so you could see. And you come in about, what, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning off your stag, and this part around your mouth with your breathing to be solid ice, this bit, your breath and that, and the cold. And they say you used to come in and you used to take that off and you peel the ice off the front and then just put it at one side, and by the time you got up to your next thing, it was dry and that was it.
Was general health good?
Yes, general health was mostly, I don't think there was anything for general health. It was always good. There was no diseases or anything, outbreaks of diseases or anything like that. It was all, the only one was just wounded, if you got wounded, but that was the only.
What was the arrangement for the calls of nature?
We used to have latrines dug down at the back of the positions, which was usually about 6 foot long, 2 foot wide, and about 8 foot deep. And you used to have a log across with two pieces and that, and hessian round the side. And you could, when you, if you were sitting there, you could see over the top, you know. You'd always got view, you know, your view wasn't blocked at all. You could see anything.
You had a loo with a view.
Yeah, anything that was happening, you could see. I mean, if something happened when you were sitting, you'd know. It was, you weren't blocked off.
Did you have patrolling?
Patrols. We used to go out on patrols. That used to come up probably twice a week.
And what was the mission?
Well, some of them were standing patrols, and some of them were listening patrols, some of them were just a roving patrol. Just like more like a fighting patrol, but you kept out of engagement if you could. Used to go, I mean, on one patrol, on one patrol, we went within, I think it was about 50 yards of the Chinese trenches, without any firing. And we were there for at least 20 minutes, just listening, yeah. Just sitting and listening. But there's no movement, no sound, so we didn't bother. We just started to make our way back to the positions again. But say your listening patrols and your standing patrols, it used to be more or less all night you're out there. It used to go out about, what, 7:30, 8 o'clock. That was in towards the winter time. It used to get darker early. But in the summertime, when it used to be lighter later, patrol used to go out later. But, I mean, on one patrol, I'd, let's see, when was it? I'd been in the Black Watch about 7 months before I was made up to Lance Corporal. Can't think of the date. And at that time, a Lance Corporal could take a patrol out. And I took this one patrol out on one position. I can't think of the name of the position now, but it was fair way out. We went out. It was like a standing patrol. When we got to where the patrol stood, it was like a trench with one or two little firing pits in it, and you'd sit in there and just listen all night. And the next morning, it come to about 5 o'clock, and it was starting to get light. And I thought to myself, well, I wonder if he's gone to sleep on the other end of that radio. You know. And I let it a bit longer, and it kept getting lighter and lighter. So in the end, I called up on the radio and asked for permission to come in. And the NCR on the other end says, oh yes, you better, it's getting too light now. And it was nearly daylight, and we were walking up from the bottom of the positions, coming back through the wire and that, and right up to the positions. But the one the shot fired, and as I say, we got back into the positions and that, and but the Major Dennison, he had me about it. He said, why were you out there so long? I said, well, I wasn't told to come in. I said, the arrangement is that the call sign comes through from them to come in. But it hadn't come, so I didn't come in. But as he said, well, if you hadn't have asked to come in, he said, well, you'd have been out there all day. I said, well, we'd have been out there all day. until I was told to come in, that was the arrangement. But
did you take that during that period? Did you have a battalion attack?
No, not in that one. It was after that we went to the hook. I can't remember the first time we went to the hook. I can't remember the date of the first time. I've got a feeling it was November, but on that first one. But I wasn't involved that much on that one. I think we were in reverse on that one, the first time on the hook, and we didn't get called upon much. But as time, we had another position in between times. One two five, I think it was. Anyway, but and there's one or two patrols in between that time, and then The second tour I went to the Hook. A Company was on the Hook itself. D Company was on the right, and C Company was on the left.